The fourth parak starts off with Mishnah Aleph giving some historical background as to the prohibitions that we saw in the prior parak with people being limited in their ability to remove stones depending on the circumstances and the sides, etc., from their own field, but being more lenient when it comes to removal of stones from somebody else's field. So, Marishona Yomi, initially, Chazal were of the view, and they paskin melaket Adam etzim va'avonim va'asavim mitoch shelo, that it was permitted for somebody to collect or remove etzim, which is wood, sticks, etc., avanim, stones, asavim, grass, from his own mitoch shelo, from his own property, kederah shu melaket mitoch shel chaveru, just like he was permitted to remove from somebody else's field, es hagas hagas, on the condition that it was fairly large. It wasn't small pieces. If you're just removing large pieces of brick, stone, etc., you're not giving off the appearance that you're really preparing your field for cultivation during the Shemitah year. It's just the large stuff that you're removing. And initially, Chazal were lenient on that. However, Misharabru Ovei Avera, when people really started to push the boundaries, and instead of just removing the larger stuff from their own fields, they started removing even the smaller things, smaller stones, smaller sticks, etc. And then it slipped into the real problem of Maris Ayin, giving off the appearance of preparing the field for cultivation during the Shemitah year. Hiskinu sheyezeh melakeh mitoch shelo, Chazal instituted that it was only permitted to help somebody else in their field, but you weren't permitted to remove anything from your own field. And in fact, it says, Hiskinu sheyezeh melakeh mitoch shelzeh, A could remove items from B's field, and only the large items at that. B could move from A. However, there were some still limitations on this. Shalobitova, the Bartanura explains that they weren't even allowed to say thank you to show appreciation, because if we show appreciation for helping me on my field, then the person is going to be more prone to want to make me happy and is going to remove not only the big items, but also the smaller items as well. So they instituted, you can work on each other's fields and assist, but don't say thank you. And certainly, you certainly, for example, if you hire somebody to help you in your field, or if you ask somebody to help you in your field, you can't even pay him his food, because if you give him food to assist him while he's working, then he's going to be more prone to making the quote-unquote employer happy, and he's going to remove not only the bigger items, but the smaller items as well. Mishnah Beis teaches us a very important concept, that if somebody violates the Shemitah laws during the year of Shvi'is, during the Shemitah year, there were times that Chazal penalized the person that they are not permitted to use their field the year after Shemitah. But indeed, it depends what they did during the Shemitah year. If they simply did certain things on the field that they should not have done, but did not prepare the field for use, it still requires more actions to be done, then there was not the penalty instituted by Chazal. However, if they did more on the field, really preparing it for the year after Shemitah for use, then Chazal instituted a penalty that they would not be permitted to use that field the year after Shemitah. So the Mishnah says as follows, Shasada Shenis Kavtsa, if there's a field that they cleared the thorns off of the field, it's a discussion. Does that mean they removed the thorn bushes from there that were attached to the ground, or certain thorns that were just on the ground? Tizara b'motzei shviz, it's permitted for those people, although they did wrong, and they should not have removed the thorns during the Shemitah year, but there's no penalty to not use the field on the year after Shemitah, because simply removing the thorns does not fully prepare that field for use after Shemitah. More actions are required. On the other hand, and there are various explanations about what we're about to read, but we'll just keep it on the high level. Shenitaiva, if indeed they plowed the field well during the Shemitah year, Oshinis Dairo, or what they did was that when they had their animals in the field, we discussed in the prior perek, when it's permitted to have your animals live in the field in certain restrictions because they are fertilizing the field while they're living in it. So the person did that, but did it in an impermissible way. The Bartanura explains that what they did was, after they did what they were permitted to do, but they failed to remove the manure and pile it up as is required during the Shemitah year. So that indeed, they left manure on the fields and they were prepared for planting now for the year after Shemitah. In that situation, Lo Sizara B'motzei Shvius, it's not permitted for the owners of those fields to plant those fields during, even on the year after Shemitah, because they did work really preparing the field for after the Shemitah year. Continuing, when it comes to Sadash and Nitaiva, which we just mentioned, if we have that field, indeed, that was plowed well during the Shemitah year, so during that year, indeed, certain types of produce grows. For example, you have trees and stuff in that field. Certain produce would otherwise, had they not plowed it well, would be permitted to eat. Some would not. But if we did have somebody who plowed the field well during the Shemitah year, Beis Shammai Omrim Ein Ochlim Peiroseh B'Shvius, is not permitted to eat the fruit during the Shvius year because he plowed the field. Beis Hillel Omrim Ochlim, Beis Hillel says it would be permitted to eat the fruits of the tree during the Shemitah year. And continuing, now we're going to talk about Shvi'is, the Shemitah produce generally, not if somebody violated the halachas of Shemitah, but in general, going and accessing what we would say somebody else's field. It's really just somebody else's field during the non-Shemitah years, but during the Shemitah year, it's hefker. People are allowed to go in and take the produce. So we have a discussion. Now that you've been permitted by the Torah to go in to somebody else's field and take the produce, can you say thank you or not? Can you show appreciation? Because in fact, the person doesn't own it. The Torah tells us that you're allowed to go in. It's yours. It's anyone's that takes. So why should you be saying thank you? Beis Shammai Omri, main ochlim peiros shvius betova. Beis Shammai is of the view that you're not permitted to show appreciation and say thank you. Because what do you say thank you for? You're giving off the impression that he owns the field that's not his during the Shemitah year to prevent somebody from going in and taking the produce. Beis Hillel Omrim, Ochlim Betova Veshalo Betova. Beis Hillel is of the view you can go in. Certainly, you can take it, certainly. And if you want to say thank you, you can. If you don't want to say thank you, you don't have to. It's up to you, but there's no prohibition on showing appreciation, even though, strictly speaking, it is not the person's produce, he's not permitted to keep you out. Now we have Rebbe Yehuda Omer Chiluf Advarim. He reverses the opinions here, and he has it that Beis Hillel is the one that says you cannot show appreciation, while Beis Shammai says you can show appreciation. And accordingly, as we know, Beis Shammai is typically the strict opinion, and Beis Hillel is typically the lenient opinion. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, when we switch the opinions and we make it that Beis Hillel is of the view that you're not allowed to say thank you, this turns into one of those cases, Zomekule Beis Shammai. This is a case that Beis Shammai was lenient, Umechumre Beis Hillel. So this was of the leniencies of Beis Shammai and of the stringencies of Beis Hillel. It's one of those cases, one of those unusual cases that Beis Hillel is strict and Beis Shammai is lenient. Mishnah Gimel deals with a situation that there's a Jew who wants to lease a land during the Shemitah year for his use as a sharecropper after the Shemitah year. And the effect of that will be that the person who he's leasing it from, the owner of the field, is going to make sure that it's in shape. He's going to plow it during the Shemitah year so it's ready for the Jew who's going to rent it, for that's going to be the sharecropper, for right after the Shemitah year. So it talks about in our Mishnah, Chokrin Nirin Mina Ovde Kochavi Mishmis Chokirus, is a certain form of being a sharecropper. You're not paying a percentage of the yield of the produce, but rather you're paying a set fee, not in money, but in produce. So it's a set amount that you're having to pay. So it's permitted to enter into that transaction of a nearing. A near is a plowed field. So the non-Jew is going to have to plow it during the Shemitah year, Bashvis, and I can enter into that transaction because the non-Jew ultimately is not obligated in the laws of Shvi'is, of Shemitah, we're talking about in the land of Israel. And even though the Jew doing this transaction and leasing it during Shemitah is going to cause the non-Jew to plow it, but that's on his head. He has no obligation when it comes to the halachas of Shemitah. Avalom Yisrael, however, is not permitted to do this transaction with the Jew during the Shemitah year out of concern that the Jew may come to violate the halachas of Shemitah and plow the field so it's ready for the person who's leasing it after the Shemitah year. Continuing in a similar vein, umachzikim yodei ovdei kochavim b'shviz, during the Shviz year in the land of Israel, it's permitted to give encouragement to a non-Jew who we see, for example, planting his field. Bar Tanura says we can tell him yashar koach, he's harvesting, he's plowing, whatever it is, you should have a tzlacha in the yield of your field. He's not violating any prohibition, this non-Jew, so we can work, give him encouragement. Aval lo yedei Yisrael, however, if we see a Jew who is working in his field, we cannot give him any form of encouragement. In fact, we have to give him tochacha, we have to tell him this is the Shemitah year, you should not be working your field, that's in violation of halacha. And continuing, when it comes to dealing with non-Jews, as long as we're talking about giving encouragement to non-Jews, along a similar vein, v'sholim v'shlomam, we can ask how they're doing, we can give them a shalom aleichem, we can give them greetings, mipnei darkei shalom, in order to have peace and good relationships with them. The Bar Tanura explains what the chiddush is here, b'afilu b'yom chagam, even if it's during their pagan holiday, it's still permitted to, for the sake of peace, to give them a shalom aleichem, say hello, and interact with them on that level, because indeed, we do want to have good, proper relations with the non-Jews that we interact with. Mishnah Dalet deals with the halachas of removing trees. And on a high level, we need to grapple with two independent issues. Number one is there's a prohibition of pruning a field during the Shemitah year, that's mira of the field, and what that typically means is removing branches from a tree, and the effect of that is when somebody removes branches from a tree, that enables the tree, the balance of the tree, the other branches, to grow more freely and more healthfully. So that is a prohibition during the Shemitah year. But here, what we're talking about, Hamedel Bezesim, in our Mishnah, is somebody who is removing the whole tree, or trees. And nonetheless, that is problematic, but the Rambam tells us, but it depends on the reason why he's removing the trees. If he's removing the trees in order to benefit the trees around it so they'll grow better, that is a problem. But the Rambam says in our Mishnah, he's poskening that if the intent of the person removing the trees is that you want the wood for construction or for burning, that is when we are going to be lenient based on our Mishnah. So problem number one is zmira. If you are basically pruning, you're not pruning the branches from the tree, you're pruning a whole tree or trees, moving them. If the intention is to use it for firewood, says the Rambam, that would be acceptable. But we have a second problem still, and that's our problem that really runs throughout our Masecht, is that of Marasayin, that even if we're doing the right thing, but if we give off the impression that we are doing work on the field or we're preparing the field to do work on it, that also is going to be problematic. So that's what we are primarily grappling with in our Mishnah. Hamedel Bezesim, if somebody indeed is thinning out some of the olive trees on his property, so he's removing certain trees, Beishamai Omri, and Beishamai is of the view Yagom, you can remove certain trees, and we'll describe exactly what this means, how many, but you can remove them, but, as the Bar Tanura explains, you're not permitted to remove the root system from the tree, because then, Yira, Shalo Yira, why do you have to leave the roots there? The Bar Tanura explains, Shalo Yira, Ka'oved, Esa Adama, so you don't look like you're really working the ground. If you're taking the roots out, it looks like you're working the ground, that's a problem of Marasayin. So we have the category of Hamedel Bezesim, you're thinning out. Not too many trees, we'll see how many. Beishamai is the view, okay, you can do it, but you can only cut the tree all the way down, but leave the roots in. Beis Hillel, Omri, Misharis, and Beis Hillel is of the view that you can not only cut the tree down, but you can remove the roots as well. Now, the Mishnah does continue and says, Umodim, that Beis Hillel, who is lenient, that you can even remove the roots, agrees in a certain situation with Beishamai, but Machlik, Ad Shiagom, when if you are doing machlik, which means you're clearing a certain area out of your orchard, you're not anymore being hamedel, thinning out, but you're removing more than is permitted. In that situation, if it's hamachlik, then you can only cut down the trees, you cannot remove the roots, because it's a more significant clearing in the orchard. It would make it look like you're really preparing or working the ground. So now we have to explain, what does that mean? Ezehu hamedel. What is this concept of thinning out the trees that Beis Hillel said you can remove even the roots? And what is hamachlik that Beis Hillel says at that point it's too many trees, you can no longer remove the roots, you can only cut down the tree. So Ezu HaMeidel, what is this concept of Meidel, that Beis Hillel is lenient? Echad HaShnayim, if you're removing one or two trees in a cluster, that is when Beis Hillel was of the view that you can even remove the root system, not only the tree. And however, HaMachlik, if you're removing something more significant, what does that mean? Shlosha Zeh B'Tzad Zeh, if you're removing three trees that are in close proximity, so it's three in a cluster together, that is going to make a larger clearing in that orchard that really gives off the appearance that you could plant it. And accordingly, in that situation, even Beis Hillel is going to be machmir that you can only remove the trees, but you cannot remove the root systems. And now we're going to qualify this entire Mishnah, B'medvarim Amurim. What are we talking about? That we have these limitations and prohibitions about cutting the tree and leaving the roots, and how many trees based on Beis Hillel, that if it's one or two close together, then you can remove the roots, but otherwise you can't remove the roots. All of that applies mitoch shelo, if it is your own property, aval mitoch shel chaveru, but if you're working, you're doing a favor for your friend, af b'machlik, even in a situation where you're removing three trees in a cluster together, yesharesi, you are permitted to not only remove the tree, but even remove all of the roots in that situation. The Bartanu explains as follows, Dula avid ina shitaken karka chaveru, because somebody working in his friend's field, he is not going to be prone to fixing up the field. It is viadua de la etzim hu mechaven. It is clear that he simply wants the trees for wood, not that he's improving the field itself in order to plant it. Accordingly, if somebody is doing this, it's somebody else's field. It is permitted not only to cut the trees down, but also to remove the roots as well. And even if it's three trees in a cluster together, that is a situation we will be lenient on, because there's not a problem of marasain. Mishnah Hey deals with the situation that somebody wants to cut branches off of a tree and to use it for wood. So fundamentally, cutting branches off a tree for wood is not a problem. It's not being done in order to improve the tree. However, the issue we're going to grapple with in our mission is, how do you treat the area of the tree after you've cut the branch off? So it says, Amnavkiya b'zayis, if somebody is cutting branches of wood, they're cutting branches off the zayis tree, off of the olive tree, it could be any tree as well. We'll see another example shortly of a sycamore tree. Lo yechapehu ba'afar, you should not cover it up with dirt afterward. That dirt, when it rains, is going to get wet. Mud is going to be good for the tree. So by putting dirt there, it's improving the tree. But what you can do, aval mechasehu ba'avanim o bekash, you can cover the area where you cut off that branch. You can cover it with stones. You can cover it with kash, with hay, with straw. That would not be a problem. That is simply going to keep the tree from drying out, but it's not going to improve the tree. Hakotzetz koras shikma. Now we're going to see a difference between a sycamore tree that has already been cut. Somebody has cut wood off of it. That's called a koras shikma. And shortly we will see besula shikma is a sycamore tree as well, but it's never been cut before. So hakotzetz koras shikma, somebody cuts off wood from a sycamore tree that the wood, the branches have been cut already. Same halach applies, lo yechapeya ba'afar, don't cover up where you have cut the tree with dirt, because that will improve the tree. Aval mechasehu ba'avanim abakash, but it is permitted to cover it up with avanim, with stones, or with hay, with straw. That would be permitted. Now, when it comes to the second type of sycamore tree, ein kotzitzin besula shikma b'shvitz, it's not permitted to cut a sycamore tree that's a besula shikma, which has never been cut before. And the reason is, mipnei shehi avoda, literally, is this is because that is avoda, that's labor on shmita. The problem here, it's prohibited avoda on shmita. It's because when the first time you cut a sycamore tree, it's never been cut before, and you cut it for wood, it grows back better and stronger. So cutting the first time inspires the tree to grow back stronger and better, and accordingly that cannot be done during the Shemitah year. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. He says as follows, Kedarka Asur, if you're cutting that sycamore tree the way they used to cut it, is they used to cut it within 10 tfachim of the ground. They used to cut the whole branch network off together within 10 tfachim of the ground. So that would be prohibited to do it in the normal way, because that's when it's beneficial for the tree the first time that you're cutting it and it grows back stronger. So what you can do, you have one of two options, O Ella, O Yimag, when you're cutting the besula shikma, this sycamore tree that's never been cut before, you have to cut it from 10 tfachim or above, relative to the ground. Or you have to cut it all the way down at the ground level, because if you cut it at the ground level, or you cut it from 10 tfachim or above, it's not going to be as beneficial for the tree. It's just going to be cutting the wood. It'll grow back, but not in a very positive manner. But if you cut it in the normal way, says Rabbi Yehuda, for the first time cutting the sycamore tree, that's kedarka, that's in the normal way, within 10 tfachim from the ground, that would be indeed prohibited the first time cutting that sycamore tree. Mishnah Vav continues with the theme that we have two hurdles to get over when doing work during the Shemitah year. Number one, it cannot be fundamentally prohibited. And even if it's not fundamentally prohibited as work during the Shemitah year, we have to make sure that there's no maris ayin that gives off the impression that we're doing something that's prohibited. So now we're talking about Mishnah Vav Hamezana Begafanim, somebody who is trimming grapevines. So he has these grapevines and he wants to trim the branches of them. The Hakotzetz Kanim, or somebody who wants to cut reeds. Rabbi Yossi Haglili Omer Yarchik Tefach. What you have to do is you have to literally distance a tefach. What's going on here? So when it comes to the fundamental prohibition of pruning, because these activities are basically pruning or very similar to pruning, that is prohibited. However, we're going to take the approach of the Rambam, as we mentioned before, as explained by the Tosfos Yontif, that we're talking about, that the person wants to trim his grapevines, or he wants to cut these reeds in order to use them as firewood. Wood wants to use them for a different purpose, not that he's trying to improve the field. So we don't have a fundamental fatal problem that you're doing work that's prohibited during the Shemitah year because of the intention. So how do we get out of the Maris Ayin issue? So here we're saying that if he's trimming it or he's cutting, Rabbi Yossi Haglili Omer Yarchik Tefach, what you have to simply do is don't cut it in the normal fashion that you do. You have to distance it a tefach, and that means if you're trimming the grapevines, don't cut it all the way down to the trunk. Leave a tefach of that branch, so you're going to do it in an unusual way. And when you're cutting out the reeds as well, admittedly you want it for firewood, but to give off the impression that you want it for firewood or that you're not trying to improve the land, etc., you're not trying to prune, you should just cut it down to with a tefach left between it and the ground. So leave a minimum of a tefach at the bottom of the reed, then that will take care of both of our problems. We're intending to use this for wood, and we're avoiding the Maris Ayin problem as well. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Kotzetz Kedarko. Rabbi Akiva wasn't as concerned. He says you can cut it as you normally would, even without leaving that tefach at the end of the branch of the grapevine or at the end of the reed. Rabbi Akiva was of the view that indeed we can be flexible, as some of Forshim explained, because you're not going to cut it in the exact same way that you do during the Shemitah. You're not going to be as exacting as you cut it because you're using it for firewood, so it's not like we're cutting it with precision. So that's going to be a difference even in Rabbi Akiva. But you can still cut it bekardom or bemagal or megera. You can cut it with an axe, you can cut it with a sickle, you can cut it with a saw, and you can cut with anything you want. Now, there are meforshim explained that this concept of cutting with an axe, a sickle, etc., that is not only the shita of Rabbi Akiva, saying that you're simply not going to cut as precisely, but you don't have to leave a tefach, but even the Tana Kama, Rabbi Yossi Haglili, would agree that you can cut with an axe, with a sickle, a saw, whatever you want. It's simply Rabbi Yossi Haglili has the requirement that when you cut, even with these utensils, you have to leave a tefach in order to avoid the problems we discussed. And at the end of the day, the Mishnah concludes with a different concept, Ilan Shenifshach. If we have a tree that has cracked, for example, the limb is cracking or the trunk is cracking, Koshrin Osa B'Shvi'is is permitted to tie it together on Shvi'is, and the purpose of this is Lo She'Yaaleh, not that we want to tie it real tight to improve and have it fully heal for the benefit of improvement and growth, Ela Shelo Yosi, but simply we want to tie it in a way that tree will not, or the branch of the tree will not continue to split. So again, we've seen this concept before that is permitted to act in order to avoid damage, but not that if it is going to have a positive impact on growth of the tree. Mishnah Zayin and thereafter, Mishnayas Ches and Tes are all related, and they're talking about the concept of during the Shemitah year, when is it permitted to start eating certain fruits of the tree in the Shemitah year. Now, why would we have a limitation? So, in fact, the Pasuk says in Vayikra Chafhei, Vahaysa Shavas Haaret Lachem La'achla, and the resting of the land shall be for you to eat. And the drasha is, it's for you to eat and not for you to waste. In fact, the Bartanur says as follows, Mishum Tedarshinin La'achla, the drasha is on the word La'achla. We eat the Shemitah produce, V'lo Lehefset, and not waste it. And accordingly, Vim Ochlan Kodem Bishulan Hainu Hefset, if you eat the produce of the field, we're talking specifically about the fruits of the tree, before they are ripe, that is considered wasting them. So we're going to talk about figs in this Mishnah. The next Mishnah is going to be grapes, and the third Mishnah of the set is going to be olives. And just also a little bit more background, what we're going to see is that there are actually a couple stages. This is based on Yerushalmi. There are a couple stages when permitted to eat. We will eat produce in the field even before it's fully ripe, but it has to reach a certain level of ripeness to be permitted to eat it in the field, and but not to bring it into our houses. To bring it in our houses is a second stage. At that point, it really has to be ripe. So we're going to see that as it has to do with figs, and then we'll see it as it applies to grapes and olives in the next couple of Mishnayos. So the Mishnah asks as follows, Me'imasai ochlin peiros ha'ilam b'shviz. When can we eat the fruits of the trees when it comes to the Shemitah year? And we're going to address figs to start with. So ha'pagim, when it comes to pagim, which are unripe figs, Mishiyazrichu, when they turn red. So that's a certain level of development of the figs while they're drying, while they're growing on the tree. Ochel bahen pito basade. It is permitted, once they have turned red, to eat them in the field. And people used to eat them with their bread, so they used to eat it together. So at that point, because it would be the normal way, even in non-Shemitah year, to eat the figs, unripe figs, once they start turning red, in an informal way, but only in the field. When it comes to bringing them into our houses in a more formal way, bichalu, only once they have grown large. Once they have really grown out and ripened, konis lesochbeis, so it's permitted to bring them into our houses, because that is when those figs are fully edible. And now the Mishnah is going to add on something that applies not in the Shemitah year. In the Shemitah year, we don't give the tithes. We don't have trumas and maestros. But in the rest of the Shemitah cycle, years 1 through 6, we give various tithes, trumas and maestros, and different types of maestros. So the Mishnah is going to discuss, when does the obligation to give them trumas and maestros kick in when it comes to figs? So the Mishnah says, V'chein kiyotze bahen, the same thing applies when the figs become large. That's the bichalu, when they really become fully edible. Bishar shnei shavua chaya b'maestros, when it applies to the rest of the shnei shavua, literally week, but it means the Shemitah cycle. So in the rest of the years of the Shemitah cycle, 1 through 6, it's only when the figs have become fully edible, they have become reached the age of bichalu, having grown large, that is when we are obligated to take off the trumas and maestros. But before they are ripe at that stage, then there's no chiyuv of trumas and maestros until they have indeed become fully edible. In Mishnah Ches, we see a very similar or almost identical concept as it applied to unripe grapes or grapes, as we saw in the prior Mishnah, as it related to figs, haboser. Now we're talking about unripe grapes. When can we start eating that? So we're going to have the same two stages. First stage is when they're not fully ripe, we can eat them at a certain point in the field. And then when they have ripened more significantly, that is when we can bring that Shemitah produce into our homes. So the Mishnah says, haboser, unripe grapes, mishihevi mayim, when they literally have water, but it means when you can start to juice them. So there's some juice inside of them. They haven't grown fully, they're not fully ripe, but they're somewhat edible, so they can be juiced. Ochel bo pito basad, it's permitted to eat. This is stage number one. You can eat it with your bread out in the field on an informal basis. They're not ready to be brought into the houses, and they cannot be brought into the houses. during the Shemitah year until Hivish. Hivish, the Bar Tanur explains, is when they really started Shiaschilu Litbashel, when they've really started to become ripe. It doesn't have to be fully ripe when it comes to grapes placed on the Bar Tanura, but what it is it's reached the stage that you can see the seeds through the skin. So that is a certain stage of development, not fully ripe, but it's also not at the stage that it is simply you're able to juice a little bit. So it's become more developed. At that point, konis l'soch beis, so it's permitted to bring that Shemitah produce, those grapes, into your house. That is when we have the permit. And in addition, we're going to see the same thing, v'chein kiyotzei bo b'shar shnei ha-shavua, when it comes to the rest of the Shemitah years, when we take off trumas and maishas, we're going to have the same thing. When it reaches that level of hivish, when it reaches that level that it's starting to become, it's more ripe. It is becoming ripe. It's starting kishiyaschilu lisbashel, so it's gotten ripe enough that you can start seeing the seeds through the skin. That is when chayav b'maasros, we have the obligation to take off the trumas and maasros in the non-shmita years. Mishnah test continues the theme that we've seen in the prior two mishnayos and applies it to zeisim and applies it to olives. But we're going to see, in contrast to the prior two mishnayos, when it came to figs and grapes, olives are going to be divided into three phases, not just two. So the Mishnah says, phase number one, mishiach nisu revi'is la'se'ah, when a certain amount of olives, so we're talking about a se'ah of olives, which is 144, the volume of 144 eggs of olives, when that volume will yield, that's what Mishan Yachnisa, when they yield a revi'is, it's a revi'is, is a fourth of a lug. A lug is six eggs, so a fourth of a lug is going to be 1.5 eggs. So in other words, we're talking about olives that are not very ripe, but they can yield a little bit oil. The more ripe the olives get, the more they can yield. So we're talking about a volume of 144 eggs of olives that will yield only 1.5 eggs of olive oil. So in that situation, potseya v'ochel basada, this is stage number one, that it's permitted, because they have started to ripen just a little bit, it's permitted to break open and to soften those olives. That's how we eat olives. They're very hard, so we break them open, soften them, and then it's permitted to eat them in the field. Level number two is yichnitzu chetzi log. Those olives have developed further, and 144 eggs, the volume of 144 eggs, so we have a se'ah of olives. It will make now not a quarter of a lug, which is a revi'is, but a chetzi lug, so twice as much. So now it can make three eggs of olive oil. If they have ripened to that level, then it's permitted, kotesh v'sach besad, it's permitted to crush them up while you're still outside in the field, and you can anoint yourself with them. So that's level number two. And level number three, if they have hichnisu shlish, if those olives have reached the level that they are now a third, which is a shlish, a third of their full size that they will grow, these are now considered properly ripened. So what we can do is we can use them as normal produce. So for example, kotesh basada is permitted to crush them in the field. In fact, you can also crush them in your home, and now it's permitted to bring them home. Bekonis l'soch speison is permitted to bring them into your home. We're talking now either about using them as olives or using the olive oil in a normal fashion. It is Shemitah produce, but now we are permitted because that's considered ripened for purposes of bringing them home. And the Mishnah says, v'chein ki yotze behen b'shar shnei ha-shavua. The same thing applies when those olives have reached a third of their full size. That's considered properly ripened during the non-Shemitah years, so years 1 to 6 of the Shemitah cycle. That is when chayavim b'masros, that's when they are going to be obligated to take off the maisers, the trumas and maisers, the tithes. And now that we've talked about figs and grapes and olives, and we've seen that there are multiple stages, most of them, the figs and the grapes, have two stages. In other words, even though they're not chayav and maiser until they are quote-unquote ripened, but we were lenient to allow eating of figs, grapes, and olives while in the field, even before they're obligated, even before they are fully ripened and obligated in maestros during the non-Shemitah years. So what we're going to see in the rest of our mission is we're going to look at usha'ar kol peiros ha'ilan. How about all other fruits of the tree? These don't have two or three stages, they just have one stage. Ke'onas on the ma'asros, kein onas on the shvi'is, just like the onah, the time that they are obligated to take off the maestros, the trumas and maestros. And that's discussed in the first perek of the Maseches Maestros. As the Bartanur points out, all of those you're only going to be permitted, Kain Onas and the Shvius, you're only going to be permitted to eat them during the Shvius when they are obligated in Maestro. In other words, there's one stage. And the one stage for purposes of when it's obligated for Maestro, when all those other fruits are obligated in Maestro, and when we're permitted to eat them, whether it be in the field or take it home, is when they have become properly ripened. And each fruit is going to have its different test as to when it's properly ripened. But we're not lenient to let people eat them even at an earlier stage in the field before they have ripened and become chayiv and maestros during the rest of the year. So it's going to go together. There's going to be one standard. Each fruit, when it has reached its ripening stage, that is when we have to give maestros. And that is also the exact same time, the ona of Shvi is the proper time that we were permitted to start eating it during the Shemitah year, be it in the field, be it at home, be it anywhere else. Mishnah Yud, as we mentioned previously, the pasuk in Vayichra Chavhei says, "Vaisa shavas haaretz lachem la'achla," that the fruit of the trees during the Shemitah is there la'achla, to eat it and not to waste it. Accordingly, in Mishnah Yud, we're going to see that it's prohibited to cut down fruit trees during the Shemitah year if the fruit has begun to grow on those trees, because if we cut down the tree, then we are destroying the fruit that has the Kedusha Shvi'is in them, and that is considered destroying the fruit and not la'achla, not eating the fruit. So that's one issue that we're going to grapple with in our Mishnah, is when is the time that we are no longer permitted to cut down a fruit-bearing tree during the Shemitah year. We're also going to discuss up until when does that prohibition exist. In other words, once the fruit has become complete, cutting down the tree will not be destroying the fruit anymore. So at what point can we cut the trees down even during the Shemitah year? And also we're going to talk about, towards the end of the Mishnah, the general prohibition of Bal Tashchis. The pasuk says Lo Tashchis Etzach, that we're not prohibited to cut down a fruit-bearing tree in general. Now we're going to discuss at least one exception to the rule of not destroying fruit-bearing trees, not only during the Shemitah year, but all years as well. So the Mishnah says as follows, Mei Masai Ein Kotzitina Ilan B'Shvi'is. At one point are we prohibited during the Shemitah year to cut down a fruit-bearing tree, because indeed we would be destroying the fruit on it and we would not be facilitating the eating because it's not edible yet. So Beis Shammai Omri, we have Demachlokas, Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel. Beis Shammai is of the view called Ilan Misha Yotzi. Every tree, when it lets forth, it's a machlokas what this means. Is it talking about from when the new leaves begin to grow in the springtime? So that shows that tree is starting to grow out and the fruits will be developing at that point? Or is it talking about when kol ha'ilan mishiyotzi, when the new fruit begin to grow, when we can discern that there are new fruit, albeit tiny fruit on the tree? That is the time that we can no longer cut down that fruit tree during the Shemitah year. Beis Hillel Omrim, Beis Hillel fundamentally agrees but disagrees on certain trees that they're going to have different tests. So hecharuvim, when it comes to the carob tree, mishi yishal shelu, that is when the carobs start hanging down off the tree because they're being weighted down. They have developed to the point that they're starting to sag and turn over and point downward. So that is when you can no longer cut a carob tree. Vagfanim, mishi yagarehu, when the grapevines, when the grapes themselves have developed seeds in them, that is the time that the prohibition kicks in, that you can't cut down the vines. Vazesi mishiyanetsu, the olives, when they have started to blossom, that is when an olive tree cannot be cut down during the Shemitah year. Ushaar kol ilan mishiyotzi, that standard is the same as Beis Shammai. And the rest of the trees are when the fruit can be seen. We said before, it's either the new leaves start to grow or the new fruit starts to grow on the tree. So it would be the same thing for the rest of the trees, according to Beis Hillel. So that is the concept, that prohibition kicks in when the fruit begins to grow, because that would be hashchata, destroying fruit that has the kedusha of Shvi'is, and that is prohibited. And continuing, when does the prohibition end during the Shemitah year? V'chol ha'ilan, when it comes to all trees Kaven Shabala Onas Hamasros, once the fruit on the trees have reached the Onas Hamasros, which is the time that they are now obligated in Masros during the rest of the years. Meaning if it were the rest of the years, it's when those fruits ripen, and each fruit has its own definition as discussed in Maseches Maisros. So whenever it reached the time period that it's ripe enough, that it's required to take maisers, trumas and maisers, of off of that fruit. At that point, during the Shemitah year, when the fruit has become ripe enough to be obligated in maisers, and the concept here is that if we cut off the tree, that fruit is already viable, it's already edible at that point, so we wouldn't be destroying the fruit because it's edible, it can be eaten. Muta lekatzitzo during the Shemitah year, that is the time that the prohibition ends, and indeed, it would be permitted to cut down those trees. Now we're just going to add on a point. When it comes to all years, there is a prohibition of cutting fruit-bearing trees, but that there are various exceptions to the rule. For example, if it's an old tree, so it's not bearing a lot of fruit anymore, and the upkeep of that tree is more expensive than the fruit that it's yielding. Another exception to the rule is that if the tree has more value cut than it has attached. How would that be? So if it's cut, you have the wood for fire or for whatever, for construction, and otherwise it's just bearing a little bit of fruit on that tree. So it's worth more financially, economically, to cut it down, to keep it. So that would be another permit, another exception to the rule of lo tashchis, don't cut down a fruit-bearing tree. So the Mishnah asks, v'kama yehei b'zayis v'lo yikutzenu, at what point is it still prohibited to cut down an olive tree? In other words, it's gotten old, but it's still yielding something. So what is the cutoff that it's still yielding X amount that it's still prohibited to cut down this tree? And we're not talking only during the Shemitah year, we're talking about all Shemitah, all years of the cycle, even non-Shemitah bearing fruit, even if it doesn't have Kedusha Shvi'is. So the Mishnah answers Rova, as long as that olive tree is producing a quarter of a kav of olives by volume, which is approximately 6 eggs in volume, as long as it's making that on a per annum basis, then it would not be permitted to cut down that olive tree. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, he disagrees. He says, Akol lefi hazayis, you can't give an objective criteria that it has to yield a quarter of a kav, 6 eggs in volume, because different trees are going to have different quality olives. And in fact, if the quality of the olive is higher, then we're going to cut it down. It's going to be not cut the tree down, but we're going to decrease the quarter of a kav requirement to less than a quarter of a kav, because we are producing high quality olives. However, if they're low quality olives, in fact, we're going to increase the requirement, is going to be above a quarter of a kav, because this is going to be a subjective standard based on the quality of olives yielded by that olive tree.